Zoom in on global affairs with insightful debates and exclusive interviews. This is World Insight.
Hello and welcome to World Insight with me, Tian Wei. China pins its hope on developing new quality productive forces in the fields of quantum technology, life sciences, and AI initiatives. From lab bench to applications and benefiting the public, what is the reality today? How do some of the most internationally respected scientists from China look at what they are doing today and working to connect it to the potential growth of the economy and contributing to China's innovation? I caught up with Professor Xue Qiquan, an academician of Chinese Academy of Sciences and president of Southern University of Science and Technology. As a leading scientist, he is leading a collaborative research effort with research groups from Tsinghua University's Institute of Physics, of Chinese Academy of Sciences, and also of Stanford University to tackle what he called the formidable challenges of experimentally realizing the quantum anomalous Hall of QAH effect. They achieve a significant scientific milestone by becoming the first in the world to experimentally observe the QAH effect in magnetic topological insulators. Now, I know that sounds complicated and technical to every one of us. Well, the pragmatic implications of all of this are extremely promising. It is believed that it could hold the potential to revolutionize low-energy electronic devices in the future. Professor Xue recently became the very first Chinese to win the Oliver E. Buckley Condensed Matter Physics Prize, the most respected prize in the field. Congratulations, Professor Xue, for your achievements and also winning a world-coveted Buckley Prize in condensed matter physics. But can you explain in average Joe's language exactly what it means? What are you working on and why is it so significant to all of us?
Yeah, I think I can talk about the significant twofold. The first, and you know, the basic research, fundamental research is for the understanding our nature. So what I discovered with the quantum anomaly effect is the new law of electron motion in our materials. For example, transistor is a special device to control the electron motion. Similarly, quantum anomaly hall allows the new law of the electron flow or motion in our materials. One of the unique features of this effect is that the electron move around the edge of the materials or the devices with basically no energy consumption in principle. So certainly it's a new law of the electron motion, and similarly, at the same time, because of this displacement transport of electron, certainly we can imagine in the future we can use this new law of electron motion to develop a low energy consumption electronics.
What you said reminds me of the latest challenge we're having about the artificial intelligence. One of the things is the energy that's needed for computational, how shall I say, computational operations.
As long as this quantum anomaly effect amplified, they can use the many different type of the electronic device. Certainly, I think the AI, some of the robots may use some of these devices. In this case, I'm sure the energy consumption will be much lower.
Tell me, how did you manage to eventually nail down the kind of areas that you are working on so much these days?
Yeah, so actually, first very important thing is the research tool or research infrastructure or research platform we have. So for the last almost 30 years, one of my main effort for the research or in my career to develop some of the new type of tool for the research. So one of the name is the molecular beam epitaxy, scanning tunneling microscope, and angle resolved photo emission spectroscopy.
Mm-hmm.
In short, MBSTM APEX combined very complicated system.
Mm-hmm.
That system allow us to control of the material at atomic level. Also, we can characterize the property of our materials at atomic level. This is very essential for the discovery of a quantum anomalical effect.
Sounds fascinating. So you have to invent the spaceship first before you reach the sky.
Yes.
How do you see your field evolving in the future? Which direction is it going?
So obviously, one of the very important directions is the quantum computation, or you can say the quantum computer. So the quantum anomalical effect combined with the superconductivity
mm-hmm.
can lead to or to produce another very novel phenomenon we call the Marona fermion. This special phenomena allow the topological quantum computing. Topological quantum computing is a fault turret, means they can operate with higher fidelity.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the future direction, my group or the field, the people in this field try to see the possibility for the future topological quantum computation.
Many see artificial intelligence as a great tool to transform different sectors of science and technology research. What about for your field?
I think will be much similar. So if the eventually the quantum computer is developed as we imagined, then the computation power will be significantly the change. So this will be also, this will also change the artificial energy, artificial AI,
mm-hmm.
artificial intelligence, because it look like the ChatGPT or the solar, this text video transformation machine, that's rely on the computation power
right.
very much. So if the quantum computer is eventually developed into practice,
yes.
so that will be change the AI also.
Yes, indeed.
Yeah, yeah.
Now you see at the ongoing China's annual political season, the government work report have been suggesting about more energy toward science and technology. And then in order to improve the new quality productive forces, how far is your field from helping to supporting to achieve that?
I think the scientists in our field or similar field really form the foundation for the future new quality productive power
mm-hmm.
or the force. Because technology in many ways initially derives from the breakthrough in the fundamental research. Like the, if you talk about the transistor, at the beginning it's a discovery in the physics of a semiconductor,
mm-hmm.
but now it's already used anywhere in the world. So I think both science advancement and the technology development are equally important. So I'm very fortunate to be a scientist in the basic research.
Mm-hmm.
And I think our effort, of course, is to eventually develop some technology, but we need to take time
mm-hmm.
to transfer a discovery in the science
right.
into a practical technology, then to the industry
Indeed.
Or economics. So we need all the people in the different aspect of the this chain.
To work together.
Yeah, work
and
together.
And also have the patience.
Yeah.
There's a lot of discussions about what needs to be done in order to really encourage basic science research, as you just said.
Yeah.
What do you think, Professor?
First, since our government realized the importance of the fundamental or basic research, for the last 20 years, stable or even increasing the financial support or the other support have been put on the fundamental research.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a very good news for the scientists in our field.
Mm-hmm.
Another thing is we have to optimize the current promotion or the evaluation system. So for the basic research people, you cannot make the annual plan for the outcome, just like in the production line in the industry. So in this case,
greatness is not planned.
Right. Greatness never be planned that way. Mm-hmm. So we need to optimize or the reform the current promotion mm-hmm. or evaluation system. Mm-hmm. So that's a very good that will be a very good encouragement for the scientists in this fundamental research.
Mm. You are the president of one of the most well-known science and technology universities in China. Mm. And I know your university has been producing enormous amount of talents every year for China and beyond. Mm. So I don't understand, how would you be able to manage that? I mean, you put so much energy into your research already.
Yeah, of course, the first thing is as a president, I have to do a lot of the management thing, administration, because to make this entire university to an excellent university is very important.
Yes.
At the same time, I have to work harder and use the other time to work on my own research. Good news for you is I established a very strong team with about the 7 younger excellent professor.
Mm-hmm.
So I only conceive the bigger project to control the research
mm-hmm.
in the more high level.
Mm-hmm.
But for the detailed work work, I will ask my younger professor to help me on that, to train the student mm-hmm. to conduct the research.
Thank you so much, Professor Xue. Congratulations once again for the great prize.
Zoom in on global affairs with insightful debates and exclusive interviews. This is World Insight.
Welcome back. This is World Insight with me, Tian Wei. Nancy Yip, a leading female scientist from China who is winning international attention in her neuroscience research, and her team at Hong Kong University of Science and Technology have recently developed a blood test for the early detection of Alzheimer's disease, a mild cognitive impairment with remarkable accuracy rates of over 96% and 87% respectively. Alzheimer's disease affects over 50 million people worldwide, and this breakthrough is believed to be a game changer. And while the central government here in China is working on its transition to new quality productive forces, what are her thoughts on the strategy? From bench to bedside, how will her research help those in need and nurture an ecosystem for innovation? Here's my interview with Nancy. Professor Ye, congratulations.
Thank you.
Plasmark AD, this test can bring people with accuracy to test Alzheimer as high as 96%.
Mm.
Wow. Do you know you have saved a lot of lives and a lot of families?
Yes.
So tell me more about it, how it works.
So my research team, we developed this blood test that can provide an early diagnosis of Alzheimer's disease. So for the disease, actually, there are changes in the brain pathology many years before the onset of the clinical symptoms. So we work hard to develop this blood test that requires a very small amount of blood, like one drop of blood.
Yeah.
We'll be able to perform the test and gives a very accurate diagnosis of the condition of the individual.
Mm-hmm.
For example, whether the individual is healthy or has low risk or medium risk or high risk of getting the disease years later, like 5 to 10 years later.
Wow.
So the blood test is highly accurate, 96% for Alzheimer's disease. And very recently, we actually can provide a diagnosis even earlier than Alzheimer's disease. For example, if the individual has mild cognitive impairment,
mm-hmm.
our blood test can also provide the diagnosis, you know, with an accuracy of about 87%.
Wow, that's really amazing, because this is a major disease for a human being, I think, for anyone age above 40 years old. I'm sure many people would come up to you and say, Professor, yeah, how can I get tested? Actually, I want to get tested just to prevent.
Yeah. Actually, the test is not available in the clinics in Hong Kong, and we have formed a startup. The university actually encouraged the establishment of startups. So we emphasize and we support innovation entrepreneurship since the establishment of the university. So we have a technology transfer center at the university that arranged that, you know, to help us take our research findings from the bench to bedside. So we can take our research findings and take it out of the lab and then implement it and, you know, provide benefit to society.
You know, when the relatives notice that their grandma, grandpa, or their parents not be able to recognize them.
Yes.
That is really a very heartbreaking moment.
Yes. It's really, you know, our passion, right?
Yeah.
You know, how can we contribute to society? How can we leverage our research findings and take it further to translate our findings to, you know, providing, you know, either a diagnosis or some treatment options for the afflicted patients.
Because I'm already getting emotional. I mean, just by talking about it, yeah.
Yeah, because it really, for this type of disease, it's not just affecting the patients, it's affecting the families,
the
caretakers and loved ones. And for this disease, it's particularly difficult, heartbreaking because of the memory loss,
right.
You know, and so, I mean, I've been working in the neuroscience fields for decades, but, you know, I think it was like 8 or 9 years ago, I told myself, I said, you know, I really need to do my best to contribute to this devastating disease, in part because of the prevalence. So globally, there are about 40 million Alzheimer's disease patients, and it's projected to exceed 100 million by 2050. So this is a very, very substantial number. And because of the aging population globally, you know, the number is bound to increase, right?
But you know, Professor, what you said from bench to bedside, it's not easy. It's not like just your work as a researcher.
Yes.
You have to build a whole ecosystem in order to make people have access to it, like common folks. How did that happen?
Yeah, so for this particular blood test, it actually started off as my PhD student's thesis project. So he actually did a very comprehensive study. So our group was the first research group that conducted such a comprehensive study to look at the blood proteins, comparing Alzheimer's disease patients with the healthy control. So when we look at the differences in the expression of these blood proteins, we found that a few hundred of the blood proteins out of, you know, 1,100 blood proteins, they were altered in the blood of the Alzheimer's disease patients. Then we proceeded to, you know, to group them into different clusters, and then use big data analysis to identify 21 proteins that we call biomarkers. So these are blood biomarkers that will allow us to come up with a method to identify the Alzheimer's disease patients.
So, but to nail down the 21 is already a big process, isn't it?
Yes.
How did you discover them or identify them? Were they by accident, or actually you were doing tests on every one of those? I think that's a tremendous amount of work.
Right. So what we did was we used big data analysis to identify these proteins that regulated or they are changed during the disease progression. And so that gave us, you know, the clues that these are the proteins that represent the different biological pathways.
Right.
Okay, so leveraging, you know, the identification of these proteins, we validated them based on more than 2,000 individuals in Hong Kong through collaboration with clinicians in the hospitals.
But that is only narrowing down the 21 proteins.
Yes.
Not to mention getting the accuracy rate as high as 96.
Yes.
That is another long process,
I would assume. Yes. I think based on the research that we did, we identified these proteins that are closely associated with the disease, right? And through these proteins, we actually can get more insight about the disease mechanisms.
Right.
So that will lead us to, you know, looking into ways to provide treatment. But based on the proteins alone, we can already build this kind of protocol or methodology that allow us to develop the blood tests with high accuracy. But how do we take this from a laboratory to bedside? So this would require optimizing the test and also validating the test and then setting up this company that would be in charge of implementing the blood test for the community.
Right.
So that's the other part of the ecosystem. So the for the ecosystem to be complete, it requires different components. First, we need to have funding, right, to allow us to do the research. And for this, I really I'm grateful to the funding support from the central government, from the Hong Kong government, and also from the you know, setting up a center in Hong Kong called the Hong Kong Center for Neurodegenerative Diseases. So all this funding support and also the platform that was set up over the years, including the Stakey Laboratory of Molecular Neuroscience to allow us to do the work.
That's the first step, of course, and then doing the hard work.
By students, right? Talented researchers, including students and staff in the lab.
And
so
patients,
they work as a
team.
Exactly. So patients, and for this, since HKUSD does not have a medical school, so I had to collaborate with clinicians, and they are very, very supportive.
I see.
And we work together as a team. So researchers and clinicians working together, and based on the samples they provide to our research team, we could do the validation, we could develop the tests, right? So again, funding, researchers, including students, scientists, and clinicians. And then the translation part is critical, and that is achieved, you know, through forming startups, you know, a university startup, to help us develop the test to one that can be implemented,
right?
You know, for the society.
Right. You know, what does it say to you when China makes very clearly that new quality productive forces will be the key for future economic development?
Yes.
Would that help you to connect the dots that you've already been thinking for years as an educator and as a scientist? How can you tap into the advantages that there is such a momentum now?
Yeah. No, I'm truly excited about this this new quality productive forces, because it is so visionary, and it is something that, again, higher education sectors can really contribute. Because for this to happen, we have to train talents, we have to have the right ecosystem, and we have to look into the future, right? What kind of technologies can really contribute to that? So this is perfect for university to contribute. Because
right on time.
Yeah, because this is exactly what we are doing, right? So we have to be innovative in our curriculum design. You know, how do we train our students? So for example, we launch Measure Plus X, and X means any emerging technology. It can be AI, it can be anything.
Wow.
So we have launched that, and the students love it, because, you know, they have the opportunity to
think
learn.
And
yeah,
to imagine.
Exactly. So now with ChatGPT, we said, well, we don't just expect students to memorize what they learn in class, but they have to learn how to think.
Professor Ye, I wish that hope come true.
Thank you.
Thank
Same
you so much.
You.
That's my latest interviews with leading scientists from China, talking about their understanding of basic science research in this country and also the ecosystem for innovation. That's all the time we have for today. I'm Tian Wei. On behalf of my team, thanks for being with us.
Thank